Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen, Empowered Communication, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the show. We are Empowered Communication. Dr. Pat and I would like to reach out to everyone and remind you to vote. It's your civic duty. We're not going to tell you how to vote. We're just going to tell you get out and vote. Until then, Dr. Allen, you're live on the air. Are you ready to rock and roll?
I am ready. I am ready to go to work because work is fun for me.
Awesome. Well, our wonderful Ronan, LA Talk Radio, our guy has got our callers ready and lined up. Caller, you're live with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Awesome.
In the midst of all of this going on with the shutdown, I'm doing virtual school with my left-handed child.
Very good.
And it has been very challenging because my husband's work has changed such that he has a schedule that he is typically not here. When he's here, he's super helpful. But we're having a challenge with getting, number one, keeping my child upbeat and feeling good because he is just feeling crushed in the middle of all this. He really misses the school. And also, my husband and I don't have any real privacy anymore. So that whole thing is very confusing. And I feel like I'm the constant pursuer of connecting, and my husband just kind of goes along with it. He's not opposed to it, but he's not pursuing it. He's exhausted and overworking, but that's what's happening. And it's just creating a bit of chaos in our home.
Congratulations, staying alive and well and married in America today.
Thank you. I've not been great. I've been actually having a little explosions of anger. They've gotten so much better. I'm working a program, but I'm really upset with the damage that I've caused with my explosions, et cetera, with my son and with my husband. And I'd love to hear any of your experience, strength, and hope on how to improve connection with my husband, just as husband and wife, and with my son.
What form of marriage do you have? Codependent or covenant?
Whichever is the one where we both pay parts of bills.
That's convenient.
Okay. We both pay parts. That's not what is desired, but that is currently how it is. Yes.
I understand. Do you have?
No, we just had our first one a couple of days ago, and it was awkward.
It is awkward because we have been lazily, casually having marriages without using business.
Right.
And so
right.
We know that you are a joint partnership, but as we know in communication, if you're with me, Empowered Communication, are you wanting to speak from your feminine, cherishable?
Yes.
Or do you want to be respected?
Feminine, please. Feminine.
Now, do you understand, is your husband right or left-handed?
My husband's right-handed. My son is left-handed, and I'm right-handed.
All right. Then you've got two different kinds of men. Your husband is built to either do feel-good or do good activities. Your son requires that they meld together like a woman.
Yes, yes, yes. This is exactly right, yes.
How old is he?
11. He'll be 12.
He's now into his early manhood.
Yes.
Have you heard me speak on the book for 12 or 13s to 18s called Brainstorms by Dan Siegel?
I don't think so. I haven't called in a while, so I don't recall that. It's vaguely familiar, but not really.
Well, yeah, this author about raising kids, he has another one for young kids, and that one is parenting from the inside out. What kind of a soul does your son and your husband have? What's the name of it?
Are you talking about a yin soul and a yang soul?
No,
referring to?
I'm talking about the anima. Men have masculine bodies, but they have feminine souls. They have yang bodies and yin souls. And that soul is called the anima. But with a left-handed ambidextrous man, he is thinking and feeling like a woman at the same time.
Okay.
So with that in mind, you have to be very, very cautious about respecting him when he gets to be 10 years old. So he's already there. Are you negotiating with him, or are you mothering him?
I'm going to say both. I negotiate with him, and then when I get angry, I mother him. But I definitely have been negotiating with him.
Do you know my 5 fighting tools to fight with right and or left-handed men?
The making the appointment, that one?
Yeah. Do you know the 5 tools? Tool number 1.
No.
No. Did you say no?
No, I don't. Please tell me. I can't remember. Sorry.
Okay. Please do not ask your husband how he feels unless he's puking or bleeding.
Yes, I do know those. You don't ask them how they feel. Ask him what he wants and tell him how I feel in order to get what I want.
And tell him, what can I do to help you and I do better? Is your husband wanting to be respected or cherished first?
He wants to be respected, but I get the sense that he also wants me to chase him like a dude chases a girl. That's how I feel. I get
you simply don't do that.
Correct.
You see?
Okay.
Don't teach him you're not going to do it. Just don't do it. What I'm sharing with you is, you know, because once you start teaching, raise your right hand. I promise.
I promise.
On my honor.
On my honor.
To respect my husband and my son now that he's over 10.
To respect my husband and my son now that he's over 10.
With special emphasis.
With special emphasis.
On respecting my husband.
On respecting my husband.
And doing both respect and cherishing for my left-hand son.
And respecting and cherishing my left-handed son.
That's right. Unless.
Unless.
I have to call the police, a doctor, or a lawyer to sue him.
I have to call the police, a doctor, or a lawyer to sue him.
Or both of them. You know,
or both of them.
Right. Do you see what I'm saying? So what I'm saying is your son and you both have larger bridges between your feeling-centered lobe, the right lobe, and your left lobe. The thinking one. Your son, your husband, separates his thoughts from his feelings.
Yeah.
But you and your son blend your thoughts and feelings.
Yes.
So you may hear your son talk about pain from not having school.
Yes, he's so descriptive, and he was descriptive of when I yelled at him. He said it felt like a snake bit his heart. And I just,
I want you, are you aware that your son and his large corpus callosum mixed both factual words from his left lobe and emotional words from his right lobe?
No, I didn't know that was happening.
I'm going to give you my best shot at parenting sons and husbands. We're not parenting.
Okay.
I want you to understand that the brain of your son and the brain of your husband is totally different.
Yes.
But your brain and your son's brain blend.
Hmm.
You see? So when your son says that poetic statement that you made, what you say to him in that occasion is, what can I do to help you and I feel better?
Okay, so I do ask him about his feelings, because I'm trying to not, because he's a boy, but you're saying,
I know,
because he's left-handed.
But his brain is not like his dad's.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
The
oh,
book,
my God. Oh, my God.
I'm going into it deeper. Remember this. The first 3 years of a child's life are implicit through feelings. First 1, 2, and 3. But the second 3 years are explicit using words. Now your husband can separate his thinking from his feelings. So when 1 minute he is wanting respect, and another minute, he may want to be cherished, but not that often, because his brain is built to do good, to feel good.
My husband's brain is built to do good, to feel good.
Your son's brain is built to do both, like you. That's why when you're disrespected, you go emotional. Is that correct?
Oh, God, yes.
But that's the moment when you've got to use my tools.
Okay.
Especially with your son.
Yes.
Now, the second tool, what?
No, go ahead with the second tool, then I just have one more thing to add, but please continue.
The second tool, remember what you're going to ask me. The second tool is when you want to teach, preach, bitch, moan, or question either one of the men, either one of them.
Make an appointment.
You've got to make an appointment to the subject and ask both of them when it would be convenient. You see, here's the definition. When your son speaks painfully, like he did over the school thing, it calls you to ask him how you and he can help feel better.
Yeah.
Your husband won't talk that way.
No, he does not.
But that's a physical, that's physical. That's not in, he feels it.
Yeah.
But your son can create feelings. Do you see?
No, you said my husband feels it?
No, he feels it, but he will speak from his left lobe anyway.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Your husband will always want respect.
Yeah.
But yeah. Your son, at this time in his life, needs respect and cherishing when Einstein, Picasso, Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Paul McCartney, Frank Sinatra, Thomas Jefferson, four or five of the presidents and the vice presidents are left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
They make very creative people.
Yes.
But when your son, for example, the Dan Siegel has two books that I really like. One is about under 10, and that's parenting from the inside out.
Yeah.
Now, what's the soul of a man or a boy? It's feminine. But your son will speak his feelings more than his dad.
Yes, true, true.
Therefore, you need to say, what can I do to help you and I feel better?
Okay, I'll say that because I'm always asking, what can I do to do better? But I'll just feel better now.
His brain is not built for that.
Okay.
Now, when he gets to be 12, which is coming on, right?
In 1 month, yes.
He's going to not produce as much dopamine as under 10 and over 18. From 13 to 18, teenagers don't produce enough dopamine to make their lives happy.
Okay.
Therefore, they do strange things.
Hmm.
Some criminals, some not. But they do things based on. So do you understand the two medical things? And the book on this is Brain Storms. That's
yeah,
12
I wrote them down.
To 18.
Brainstorms.
What?
12 to 18. I'm writing it down. Yeah, got it. Brainstorms.
Okay. So you don't have anybody little, so you probably won't need to read, you know, parenting from the inside out because I'm doing it right now.
Okay.
When your son is extremely sensitive, go towards the right lobe and ask him what you can do to help you and he feel better. You would do the same if you had your grandpa, who was 52 to 62, 45, that midlife crisis, because at that time, the testosterone is down and the estrogen is impacting.
Yeah.
Are you tracking me?
I am tracking you, yes.
I teach everything based on science, even if our culture isn't doing it today. I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now,
okay.
What is it you wanted to ask me?
My husband has a deep-seated fear of our son walking in on us. When we are having adult relations, we live in a small space.
Please feel free to lock the door.
That's what I said. I said, I have a thought. Would you like to hear it? What do you think about
getting
a lock on our door? And he said, great, but he hasn't bought the lock. And I'm always suspicious, like, why won't he get the lock? Is he trying to tell me something? You know, I get annoyed and I start getting frustrated and then I start getting all masculined up and I have to go take a walk and get out of there.
Why don't you just get the lock?
I asked him to go get the doorknob. I asked him, what do you think about getting the doorknob? And he said, okay.
That's mothering.
I thought that was the way you're supposed to ask.
Dear...
No? Uh-oh.
He was talking about your sex life.
Yeah.
He was not into how do we solve it. He was sharing his feelings. And how old is your husband?
48? Yeah, 48.
I have news for you. He's in perianthropause.
Okay.
You know what that means?
It's like that the guy version of menopause.
Your husband, it's now your son and your husband are both feeling more.
Oh, my God.
You can pray, too.
I'm praying because it didn't even occur to me. I know about perimenopause or andropause.
If it occurred to you, you would have heard me teach it. I'm teaching you stuff I've learned. So between 42 and 52, men and women go through perimenopause. You know that one.
Yes.
And periandropause. Andropause is their version of menopause, but it's when their testosterone's going down them, and mature men are very, very, very sensitive. Even when they're young, they're dynamically one or the other, respected or cherished. Are you hearing what I'm saying? Your son needs to be having the mother or a woman who basically knows that at his age, going on 12, he needs to be respected unless he is talking in exquisitely sensitive terms.
Okay.
And your husband is saying, I'm afraid of my son coming in watching us have sex. That's a factual piece of data.
Yes.
But when you said buy a lock, you were mothering him.
Yeah, buy a door. Mm-hmm.
And that's not respectful. What can I do to help us do better? I have an idea, you say. Why don't you or I get a lock for the bedroom door?
Well, I thought I said that when I said, what do you think about getting a lock for the bedroom door? And you're saying that was mothering him in that moment. And I thought I was asking him correctly.
You know what? He was telling you about his feelings of being caught sexually. Does that qualify for what can I do to help us feel better?
Yes, it does. Yes. Okay, I hear you. I understand that.
So since he's agreed to the lock, you do something where you put it in a box with like a screwdriver and a box of strawberries and maybe some bubble bath and wrap it up with a bow on it and like a little note that says, open me. Or it's very easy to replace a door lock. You could do it and put a note on the door that says, find the key, it's on me.
Oh my God, that's so cute. Oh, that's adorable.
Then when he finds a key and he opens your bedroom, you got rose petals on the bed and, you know, something like that.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
I'm so angry because I thought that I feel pursue-y all the time and that just, but I'm willing to stop feeling that and to just get more curious about that little idea because I actually like that idea. That sounds like fun. That sounds exciting too.
All right.
And I think he would feel a little bit cherished and respected for his feelings of not wanting your son to walk in.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that's been a thing for a long time now. I'm like,
I understand that, but I want it solved because he's the age he is, and he needs you to know this principle. All of these scientific things impact love, relationship, sex, whatever. Do you see?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
Do you have any questions about what I just taught you?
No. I'm just going to conduct the experiment and get back to you guys in a week.
You know what? That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
We love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time with me.
Okay. Good.
Have a great day. Good luck, caller. We can't wait for your update.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. I want to remind everybody of the call-in number. It's 323-203-0815, and we love your questions and your calls. We have another caller. 0815, and we...
Hi there.
Hi, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first off, I just want to say thank you so, so very much. I actually found your book in happenstance. Somebody was giving it away and just had it on the ground. I was like, oh, let me pick this up and see what's inside.
Wait
and
a minute, which book?
Oh, I'm sorry. How to get to I Do. Getting to I Do.
Oh, Getting to I Do. Okay, that's great. I have a number of books.
Because, yes, you do. I'm so sorry. It was in my head. I should have said it out loud. But I was so excited because it happened at the exact time that I needed it. My now fiance, him and I were dating and we weren't official yet. And I read that book and we discussed the book and I used a number of your tactics and it actually got us to be official. And we also chose not to live together until we were engaged because of you as well. And I just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
I do have a question. So I've noticed recently that my left-handed fiance, he
left-handed?
Tends to ask me.
Left-handed?
Left-handed, yes.
How old?
Left-handed. He is 30 years old. We both are.
Oh, he's gushing testosterone.
Yes. But he asks me all the time what I think. And he asks
I know
me
that. Do you understand the negative side of women's lib is that too many women took it home and wanted respect too? I only need one man. We women have feminine bodies, but we have masculine souls.
Yes.
My book that I did a year ago, it's a man's world. They take care of things. And a woman's universe, we're in charge of oxygen, air. Got it?
Got it.
And so the truth of the matter is that we have got to communicate in a way that suits the relationship. And the relationship is either a waltz, a slam dance, or a, what is the other one? What is that one where you just doing nothing. Well, whatever. Anyway, it'll pop up. So with that in mind, what was your question?
The question is, how do I respond when he continually asks me what I think?
You immediately turn your word from think to feel. I feel good about that. I feel scared about that. You just switch it.
Well, and I have done that a lot. But something that he seems to want me to make the decision. Like he wants to,
what he's saying. He's saying, I want your input into the decision. Well, tell me what you're thinking, sir. And he says, I think it'd be a good idea to paint the house purple. How do you think? What do you think about that? You say, maybe you'll say, I don't like the house purple. But you give him the feeling, I don't like it. You basically share your feelings about it.
I see.
When he says, I want to paint the house purple, and you say, I want to paint the house red, that's when I start making money. Are you wanting respect from him or cherishing?
Cherishing.
In order to be cherished, you have to respond to his respectful. See, men are being taught to respect us, and then they punish us because we want to be respected. You see? So does your is your fiance now?
Yes, fiance.
Okay. Do you think he wants to be respected by you or cherished first?
Respected.
Okay. Then that's what you do. And when he says, I want to know what you think about buying this car. And you say to him, I truly appreciate your respect for my skills at helping us buy a car, but I'm afraid I don't have enough skills to know how to do that. So I can tell you if I like colors. I can tell you if I like leather seats. I can tell you things that feel good, but I'm not sure I know RPMs and whatevers.
Right.
You see?
Right, that makes sense. I do.
So whenever possible, unless he really wants to do business with you, then you say, thank you for respecting me, and give him your, if you have any skills in the area of the question, if you don't have skills, say so. You see? His mother may have been an engineer, so he thinks all women are like his mother. Not so.
Well, his mother actually passed when he was about 5.
Oh, she died?
She died, yes.
And was she replaced with another stepmom?
I don't believe right away. But eventually, I think so, yes.
Okay, so dad raised him himself for a while?
Yes.
Is dad a masculine man, feminine man, or both?
Well, I've only just met him, you know, over the past couple of years, and he seems to be more in his feminine now. But he is old enough to be in that.
Okay. So with that in mind, was he raised properly? Was he raised to do good, to feel good? So he really wants you to be, hopefully, a hunk of mama, respectable. You understand? Because he lost his mom at 5, and whatever he got, he may really respect women.
Well, I mentioned to him that might be the case, because he kept asking me what I thought. And I said, when you ask me what I think, you know, you're trying to make me your mom in a sense.
What did he say?
And he didn't really like that idea. He didn't elaborate too much on it, but he didn't like it.
Then thank him for his respect, and then tell him not only what you think, but totally tell him what you feel.
I attempt that. I will continue to attempt to do that.
Okay.
Another thing I wanted to mention with him, I think is along the same lines, is whenever, you know, I always say, hey, you know, I have a thought. Is now a good time to hear it?
Yes.
And he doesn't seem to like the idea of me making an appointment with him. He says, well, you don't have to ask. Just say it.
You know, he wants
Do you know why?
Why?
Because he values cherishing.
What do you mean?
When you sound like you respect him, it reminds him of how he didn't get as much cherishing from his mother who died.
Mm-hmm.
He feels, in fact, he feels not cherished.
Hmm.
But that's because he has not experienced a woman who wants to be cherished more than respected. We all want both.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth of the matter is, if he's castrated by the experience of losing his mother, I don't want you to support the castration because he will eventually resent it.
Hmm. So what do you mean by the castration? What do you mean not support it?
Make an appointment when you want to teach, preach, bitch, moan, or question him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he says, why do you do that? I don't like it. It doesn't feel loving.
Mm.
I do it because I don't want to be the pilot on your plane. You're my pilot. I'm your co-pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a good, respectable man?
Yes, absolutely.
Does he make decisions well?
Yes, I would say most of the time.
And when you don't like what he's doing, you make an appointment to share your uncomfortable feeling. Is that correct?
I do my best to.
Okay. Does he take it, or does he just get mad at you for making an appointment?
Probably the trying to make an appointment. Sometimes he'll accept it, but he's almost like, in a sense, training me to not ask him.
You cannot ask him what?
To make an appointment, to just say.
Say what you're saying. That's a nice spontaneous thing. But the problem with spontaneity is it produces chaos. Discipline allows spontaneity. Honey, I have an idea about how to buy a house. When would it be convenient for you to hear my idea? Gets his driven attention. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most people don't realize that the fighting they're doing with loved ones is based on not respecting and cherishing clearly. Because people misread, especially the way they're raised. You see?
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather you explain, I feel more comfortable when I know you want to hear what I'm thinking. I feel more comfortable.
Ooh, yeah, that makes sense.
But that's absolutely the part where you get cherished and he gets respected.
Okay.
You see?
Okay. I do.
And those three marriages, those three types, you know, when people dance but they don't hold each other, what is that called? Discoing?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, discoing. Disco dancing. Yeah.
You're either waltzing, definitely not waltzing, slam dancing. What?
It's definitely not waltzing. Right.
You see what I'm saying? So what I'm doing is teaching people to blend their communication so that they both get respected and they both get cherished and know what's going on while you're doing it. you don't use my tools on easy days. You use my days, my tools on touchy days. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Okay.
Do you have anything else?
Just one last thing. So he, you know, because he is in his masculine, he doesn't completely express his feelings often. But how do I respond when he does decide to express his feelings? Do I cherish him in that moment?
If it is a rational expression of feelings, then you say, what can I do to help us feel better? But if he's being emotional, what can I do to help us do better? So it's really whether he's binging on emotions or whether he's sharing feelings. Remember, emotions come straight out of the gut. Feelings have to go from the body, through the mind, and out the mouth.
Yes.
Do you see?
That's mostly how he's expressing.
That's what?
That's mostly how he's expressing. It's not through emotion. It's going through the body and the mind and coming out.
Okay. That is rational. And that you would say, what can I do to help us do better?
Okay. When it's rational, you say do better.
When it's rational, do better, because he's using his right and his left lobe. If he's swearing at the neighbor, you don't say, how can I help us feel better? Because he's basically out of control.
Right.
For example, you throw me the line where he says, I don't want you to ask permission. I want you to speak up. Will you do that, whatever he says to you? No?
Yeah. So you don't have to ask. Just say it.
I appreciate you want me to spontaneously say what I think, but I'm uncomfortable with being without your awareness. I have some thinking that might go against your thinking, and I am totally not comfortable taking that risk. So are you willing to accept the fact that I want you to know when I want to teach or preach to you? I don't want to spontaneously tell you how to be you.
Yeah, I, that was very informative.
Good.
All right.
Have a good
day.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
Bye.
So I want to do a little business right now. One of the things I want to say is the Want Institute brings us here to be with everybody live on Thursday every week. And how you can reach us to talk to us on the air is by dialing into 323-203-0815. The One Institute is a 501c3, and so I'd like to take this time right now to once again thank our recent donors, one who wishes to remain anonymous, and our other donor, Ellie Sheedy, for their generous tax-deductible donation. And we have a caller live, so I'll come back to the rest of my business later. Caller, you're live with Dr. Allen. You have a question.
Dr. Pat?
Hello, caller. Yeah, you're live.
Hello. Okay. I was wondering if you could help me with my next step in responding to a text and an email from my long-distance boyfriend of 5 years. The short text was sent on the 10th.
Are you gay or straight?
I'm straight.
Okay. And your voice didn't quite. So your boyfriend, right. You're a girl and okay. He's a boy.
Yes, I'm a girl.
Okay.
And he's a boy. Okay.
All right.
And let's see. The last caller was amazing because you answered so many things about left-handed and very much described a lot of the scenarios that we have. But I am in a quandary about responding to a text and an email that I got from him. So the text was sent on the 10th, and today is the 29th, but I haven't responded to it yet. And the email...
And it's from him? It's from your boyfriend?
Yes, yes. And I'll read you the text because it's a short one. But I wanted to tell you that he had emailed me to admonish me about a situation on the 1st, okay? And this was after a 6-day visit where he lives, and because he lives out of state and I live in California.
Okay.
And so on that 6-day visit, he proposed to me with a ring. And I had it on for the ring on for 10 hours before I removed it. After his interrogating and intimidating me, when he asked me if I had told my adult offspring that I was on a trip away to see him. And he challenged his trust. He brought his trust challenge in my keeping secrets from him, since I didn't tell my family that I had gone to see him, besides my being in a car passenger with his friend who was driving back 800 miles for 15 hours, and he didn't want him to be alone, so they asked me to ride with him. And then my boyfriend picked me up from his friend's house. And then I spent
What is your question? I hear that he gave you a critical message about his fear. Mm-hmm. Do you know that jealousy is an indicator of territoriality, and that if a relationship does not have jealousy, whoever's in it is not in love? I hear that your boyfriend was jealous of you spending time in a car with another man. Is that true or not?
That is not true, because he had asked me to ride back with his friend. This is his friend that... who had come out here to California for a doctor's appointment, had to drive back.
One sentence. What was your boyfriend upset about? I mean, I hear the story, but what is he upset about?
He's upset that he proposed to me, and in 10 hours, after I revealed that, after he asked me, you know, does my family know that I'm here, you know, on a trip to see him? And I told him no.
Did he give you a ring?
Yes, he gave me a ring that I wore for 10 hours.
Because you didn't announce the engagement to your family.
He had just given me the ring, and this was the first day of my 6 days there.
Understand that, but you were seeing your family.
No, I was not seeing my family. My family lives in California, and he lives where he lives.
I got it. So he was mad at for not speaking to about it?
He's mad at me for keeping our relationship, as he called, a secret, from my offspring, my two adult offspring, who are, you know, who are in their mid-20s. So they're adults.
I totally understand that. So
and,
you want me to help you send a message to him?
Yes, I want you to. I want to read you the text he gave me, and then tell you something about the email he sent, and ask you your suggestion.
That will take too long. If you want to write a message off screen right now, I will read it, or you will read it to me. To the end of this show.
Pat, the text is one sentence. I just want to read you the text.
The one you gave him back.
No, I didn't give him. I did not respond to him at all yet. I'm waiting.
I want you to write a response. Go write the response.
I'm not on a computer, but that's why I said I only have this one. It's one sentence that he said on the text, and it was an apology. So, you know how you usually say return messages, text messages quickly. Well, this message was written on the 10th, and this is the 29th, and I have not heard. We have not texted back from one another, and we haven't talked to each other. From this, because I think he thinks that the ball is in my court to respond,
well,
because he apologized.
Call him up and tell him the story of the no contact. Please, what you're talking about now is going to take too much time for me to do and carry on the show. So what I want you to do is to call up this human being and say that there was a faux pas and you weren't aware the time apart. Please talk to him. Talking is much more feeling centered. Tell him what you're telling me.
I had written a text response to this that encapsulated with asking if he could, you know, the nice way of asking if he could help me understand that about him sending the text.
Okay.
Over.
Wait till he responds back. This is too
that
big
text,
a deal.
Is it?
Yes. What I want you to do is, if you want, you can finish this statement with what he says when you respond to him with your explanation.
Okay, so I should call him with and say what I was going to text him instead of sending him what I was going to text him, because I was going to text him was also only two sentences to his one sentence. That's why I wanted to, since I thought it was short, I thought I could read it to you after you had the background in it, and then I would have a direction.
It's two sentences?
Yes.
All right, read the two sentences.
Okay, his one sentence is, I'm sorry I made you feel insecure about
our
relationship.
No, wait a minute. Is this yours you're saying now or his?
This is his. This is why I'm responding to it, because after I took off my ring, he said something. He said that boyfriends have shelf life. So he said, I'm sorry I made you feel insecure.
Read just what you said to him, please.
What I said, okay. Can you help me understand you're sending that text message when you have told me over and over for years that I'm yours? In your letters professing your unconditional love, commitment, and devotion always, that I believed you said would be true for any and all ups and downs coming our way.
That's beautiful. Please respond next week with his response.
Okay, so shall I text that or shall I call him? and read.
I would call him.
And okay. And just and call him and then tell him that I have a response that I want to read to him.
Yes,
wouldn't
you
it be
will.
Easier for?
Yes, you will. You'll read the response to him.
Okay, so I'll call him and tell him that I'm sorry that I didn't respond since the 10th. But
that's
I read
right.
to him my response.
That's right. That's what you do.
Okay, so that response is good?
What?
So my response is good?
Your response is good, but give it to him in one package. Read it
by voice.
By speaking about read it to him.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank
Bye.
You, caller. So anyway, what I was saying earlier was this. I have got several messages over the last 2 weeks regarding whether or not you're fully retired and still doing phone appointments. And of course, you are still doing phone appointments. One of the appointments that you do is, you know, as little as 15 minutes for as long as anybody needs. And I want to remind everybody to reach out. Yeah, to reach out via email to info@drpatallen.com to set your appointment. If you have a caller live, caller, you're live with us on the air. Do you have a question?
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call. First
yes.
of all, I've called you a lot in the past, and I'm the one who left my partner 6 weeks ago because I think he might be a sex addict. I think he had several relationships going on and he was secretive, evasive, and unwilling to work things out and seductive in communication. Like his attempts to get me back over these last few weeks were just all about how miserable he is.
That's right.
And he went to my family and like, he knows you and I, you're the person I call and we've called you together in the past. So he knows if he genuinely wanted to work something out, we could have called you.
Right.
So he like did everything as usual, his own way, which is like really.
He wanted to be intimidating and seductive. Shame and guilt and fear. Loving people want
yeah.
to negotiate with love.
Right. So that relationship was like just a good lesson in extremely poor communication and poor negotiation. And it showed me that like all my relationships were built on basically that. And I don't want to have those relationships again. And at the same time, like I would love to move on and be available and meet other people. And so I have this fear about getting involved in another similar relationship because all my past well, relationships are like this.
Are you saying what are the criteria for you starting a serious relationship? Do you do premature sexuality?
No, I did. I followed your tools with this one. So I did get a ring. And we were engaged before we moved in. So thankfully that was new and awesome to at least have that.
I got it. And then you found out he was unfaithful. Is that what you said?
Yeah, correct. I kind all of
right.
I knew it from the beginning. I suspected it all along, and then yeah.
We all have secrets. Some can be fixed and negotiated, and some cannot. So what I'm hearing
yeah.
is he's trying to shame you into negotiating.
Or I thought it was guilt, but maybe that's what it is, is shame.
That's what it is, is shame.
His last attempt was saying he would pay for my EMDR therapy sessions for the next month and a half. If, you know, and that's all he wanted was to just pay for my therapy and nothing else. Don't take it as a way to get back together. But I didn't. I haven't responded to anything he's said.
So you are no longer bonded to him. You have lost respect for him.
I've lost a total respect for him. And all I think about now when I think of him is the three women, at least that I know of, that he, I believe, was cheating on me with. So I just think, I don't want these women in my life.
I know and that. And so, you dating, whether it's Zoom or whatever, are you being available to making friendships with men now?
I want to very much, but I don't know. I don't know how, like, I don't know that guys are interested in me. I don't know if they're, nobody's asking me out.
Not unusual, not close. I'm talking about getting to know you as a human being. Do you go to any Zoom classes?
Yes, I do. Well, I do Zoom 12-step meetings. I do meditation groups. And I started recently making YouTube cooking videos.
So you don't do any Zoom dating friendship groups?
Oh, I didn't know there was any Zoom dating groups.
Believe, Kelly, are you aware of any Zoom dating groups?
I don't know the names of many off the top of my head, but you can easily Google that.
Okay. And I just really would love to meet a guy who's familiar with your work, Dr. Pat. I wish there was a Zoom dating group, Dr. Pat Allen students or Dr. Pat Allen followers.
Then why not start a mingle yourself? In other words, set up a Zoom group for yourself, for men and women.
How in the world would I promote that on Facebook?
Yes, you do it on
Facebook, Instagram. Yeah, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the regular social medias. And then you can actually create a group on Facebook yourself, make your own little page. And also there's meetup.com. That's meetup.com. Okay,
meetup.
Yeah, and I think there's another one.
Being in contact is not healthy right now. So you're building friendships that will be maybe next year.
Okay, that's encouraging, but yeah, I will. I'll look into like other groups and just putting myself out there and being visible.
Please do that.
Okay.
Please do that.
All right. And I hope to God, I really don't want to have another similar relationship, though. So I'm going
to
call
you
regularly.
I want you to follow your neurotransmitters that flagged your feelings. Neurotransmitters, dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin. We women, we are very instinctive about what we feel, with or without logic. Men tend to follow their intuition, which is so logical. So I want you to pay attention to your instinct that tells you you're doing it again.
Okay.
So set up a Zoom group that's for friendship building with potential.
Okay. I'll see if I can find some friends that'll support me in doing that.
Good. Excellent.
Thanks, Dr. Pat.
You're welcome.
Right. Check in again.
Thank you, caller.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And if anybody's out there that has a Zoom group for dating, because that's the way you get to know each other.
Exactly. We've got a caller live with us. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. My question is, can you hear me?
Yep, I can.
Okay, wonderful. My question is, how do you rebuild trust after it's been broken?
How do you do what? Say it again.
How do you rebuild trust after it's been broken? If you've been in a relationship with a man where there's been sort of a history of not being completely upfront and you finally put your foot down, you know, if there's been, you know, stringing along and not being upfront and not wanting to commit, and you finally put your foot down and you're like, I'm done with this nonsense. And then he says, okay, I'm ready to cooperate. I'm ready to commit. How do we begin rebuilding trust? Where do we start?
Number one, please don't trust any human being.
That's good.
And then I want you to evaluate trustworthiness. I always say at the end of the show, the only way you know you love yourself or anybody else is by the commitments you're willing to make and keep. So the first premise is don't trust. Then watch how they keep their commitments.
Okay.
See, when you aim into a relationship expecting trustworthiness, you're setting yourself up for distrust.
Okay.
There's a wonderful book by David Buss, and it's called Dangerous Passions. I started talking about it a little bit ago. It's about the need for jealousy.
Yes.
That particular book speaks to the issue of, please, you've got to get monogamy, continuity, and long-term communication.
Yes.
You've got to negotiate things.
Yes. So if we negotiate a commitment and, you know, barring no problems, that this is leading to a marriage.
You don't negotiate a commitment. You negotiate if he's going to pick you up at 5 o'clock and if you've got a date on Saturday. You don't do negotiations. You watch the little ones.
Okay. So you watch him to see if he makes and keeps agreements, and you just start it off small. Saturday night, 5 p.m.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
You see?
Regular phone calls, regular contact.
That's exactly. You build friendship is the beginning of a romance, not sex. See, that's the way we've been living. We've been touching each other, and now we can't do that, and we're going to have to learn how to start love affairs with friendship.
Okay. So then the roadway toward rebuilding trust and knowing that you have something good for this relationship is make sure he makes and keeps agreements, watch the little things, see if he keeps his word. And when he doesn't keep his word, or if he doesn't keep his word,
then you do it this way. Think of, is he 51% valuable to me? And what is that 1%? He's got a great sense of humor. He's belongs to the same temple. You've got to have something that makes him special that's worth having a human being that's not perfect.
That's good.
You see?
Because there's a lot in there that makes him special, that is worth him being perfect. It's just...
And, of course, sex and closeness today are very dangerous. So that is pretty much eliminated from the scope of trustworthiness. You are defensively, scientifically withholding intimacy to see if your friendship will bear weight in trustworthiness.
Absolutely. And I'm totally fine with that. I date the Pat Allen way, so I don't give sex without contract.
Good. Then you're ready to keep building.
Okay. Okay. All right. I like that. So then just make sure that he keeps his word on the little things. And if he's not keeping his word on the little things, then make sure that he's 51% valuable in other areas. And if he is, no one's worth marrying. Go ahead and keep him.
That's right. But continue to bring it up when he doesn't make and keep his agreements.
So
in
when
other
I bring
words,
it up,
speak up. What? Use
when
the
I bring
tools.
It up, I was just about to ask, do I use the tools to bring it up?
Totally, totally, totally.
Okay.
Okay.
I have another question for you. You have said that when women have painful childhoods and home lives, we crave alcohol, drugs, and sugar.
Yes.
What do men crave when they have painful childhoods and home lives?
What they crave is sex. The dopamine, the two sources of producing dopamine, which is one of the neurotransmitters, it's an upper, are gambling, money gambling, and sexuality.
So gambling could be like big risk taking as well, which would kind of be
anything.
Sexual thing.
It's that neurotransmitters are our electrical systems that invite us to join things. Serotonin is like nature's tranquilizers. It will help you handle painful situations, serotonin. Norepinephrine will keep you from going overboard with dopamine addictive problems. In other words, a herd of buffaloes going over the cliff will produce norepinephrine in their bodies to stop them, so they signal the rest of the herd. So dopamine is an upper, serotonin is somewhat of a tranquilizer, and norepinephrine is a downer to stop you from going hysterically into some wild venture.
Got it.
Okay.
I've got it. Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Yes, I guess.
Okay.
Yes.
I've been to your seminars, and I've heard you, every once in a while, you'll have an African-American person who will come forward, and usually you'll say, you know, there's a lot that has been done in terms of dating and relationships between Black men and Black women, specifically African-American Black men and Black women, due to slavery.
That's right.
Can you go into just a little bit of that and how it affects the dynamic of romance between Black men and Black women?
Well, since the time of slavery, when we whiteys or whatever, yellow, browns, what we did was we went into a culture, Africa, and we took members of a solid culture, because Africa is a source of cultural development. It is powerful. But when we got them on a boat, we put the men in the base of the boat, and we let the women be up there with the other cultures, and usually for sexual reasons. But the men were disrespected. In other words, it's like a country with a culture that has an invasion of people that are not the same culture come and take you into slavery and use your women and destroy your men disrespectfully. I maintain that racism in our culture is still a byproduct of the early creation of slavery. Man in the bottom of the boat and women on the base of the boat in the upper part. But the women had more power than the men did.
I agree with everything you've just said. And I think what I've seen a lot with the relationships as a whole is there are a lot of very dominant women then who are disrespectful to the men and don't realize that they're disrespecting
the
men.
Yes, yes. I have one gorgeous actress that is writing a book because she was in a group of black women that I had, and I want this girl to write a book. I'm not black, so I want this girl to write a book that shows that the power that black women got in the slavery carried over into our culture, in which black women get respected more than black men do. And
yes,
even from black women.
Yeah, I think there's a socialization process that's very far-reaching, and you know there are a lot of different reasons for it that I can't go into right now because it would take too long. But I agree with you, and I think unfortunately the misunderstandings about that dynamic and how it contributes to the romantic relationship is where we need a lot of help and information and teaching around.
My last book is "It's a Man's World and a Woman's Universe." It doesn't speak to the racial issue, but I generally, whenever I work with black women or black men, I remind them that the damage done during slavery, I perceive, is still out there.
I think you're absolutely right. And in watching you work with a black man who was actually saying he was conditioned to respect black women in dating, I heard you correct him and say, no, you need to cherish her, and then she will feel respected. And I agree with you. I'm a black woman, and that's what works for me. But I also agree that there's a lot of confusion because a lot of black men are taught to respect their women, and then we don't get cherished as a result.
I totally agree, but I'm doing my best, and I'm going to see if I get that girl to finish that book.
Well, I appreciate you for all of your work. I won't take up any more of your time. I just want to say thank you, Dr. Pat Allen. You're always wonderful, and your insights are very wonderful.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I enjoy what I do. Okay?
Thank you, caller.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. So, I was saying, reach out to make an appointment with Dr. Allen to info@drpatallen.com via email. That's the best way to book an appointment. And Dr. Allen's all kinds of amazing things in those appointments. Even if it's from listening to a message that you want to send to somebody, going over a wonderful hi-bye letter and having Dr. Allen help you refine it. You know, she does these amazing...
have reached the voicemail box of 71.
There's great, amazing life script sessions. Those are a little more in-depth. That typically takes an hour, sometimes a little bit more. And there's documents that Sue Wagner, the CFO, who runs the One Institute, will send you to fill out. But Dr. Allison, hi. Dr.
Allison, my phone was goofy for a minute.
I was just telling everybody how you do these great appointments. Dr. Allen also will do dream appointments with you. If you've been with us the last week, we had Patricia Altinge on, and Dr. Allen and Patricia Altinge are amazing dream readers. And you can do your dream with Dr. Allen. She does education on her tools, which are incredible and vital. But one of the questions I always get is about the high bi-letter. And I just have three more women reaching out to me and one man who was saying, could Dr. Allen go over the five paragraphs of the high bi-letter? And they're always asking, does it work in gay relationships? Does it work in friendships? Does it work? How does it work? And I'm always saying it works in all of those things. Dr. Allen's tools are amazing because they're not just about male-female relationships. They're also about friendships, family relationships, relationships with parents and children. It's pretty stunning. So Dr. Allen, do you think you could talk a little bit about the high bi-letter and the five paragraphs?
How much time do I have?
Let me see here what time we got going on. By 22. Yeah, you've got about 40 minutes. We've got about 30 minutes left in our show, a little bit more than 35 minutes left of our show. So you've got plenty of time.
Okay. Anyway, the high bi letter is a spinoff of my tools for the occasion when you have inadvertently terminated a relationship that you didn't realize was valuable to you, and you wanted to reach back to the person that you had, quote, dumped, or you're the dumpee. Somebody has not followed through with you, and you basically want to reach back to them so that you get a complete closure or an opening for a new step, a new aim for the relationship. So here's what it is. The first paragraph in this high bi, it's an overview of the relationship. The beginning, the middle, and the end. An overview by saying everything you liked about the person you either accidentally or deliberately dumped, or they accidentally or deliberately dumped you. What you liked about them. Now, I use the word like, the word love is acceptance. Agape love is accepting the other person, mostly because they're valuable to you and you know what it is that you value. So I ask you to write down what you like. People come to me and they say, we love each other. Yes, yes, I know you love each other. But do you like each other anymore? No. Oh. Okay, that's the situation where you're not approved of, even when you're loved. So the first paragraph in a high bi letter is you saying what you like, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, educationally, financially, whatever, about the other person. The second paragraph is the pain of the failure of the relationship to continue, the pain of them not calling, the pain of you realizing that you made a mistake when you terminated them or you told them off for whatever reason. So it's a painful paragraph. The third paragraph is what you never want again in a relationship. Remember, women get what they want by knowing what they don't want. Women have to feel good to do good. The soul of a woman is masculine, but the body is feminine. And we women, we want to feel good in our bodies. So for a man, he would write the third paragraph, and it would be what he does want in a woman. That you have it or you don't have it, but what he does want. Because men get what they want if they know what it is and they communicate and negotiate. There's only three ways to communicate. Intimidate with fear, or seduce with shame and guilt, or negotiate with love. With people you approve of. So that's the third tool, is a woman would say, or a feminine man, because there are men who are in effect living by their soul, which is feminine, temperaments, or even chemistry. Every human being is female for at least 8 days in utero. The mother's body recognizes the chemistry of a baby boy, and she and the boy start producing male hormones that convert the perfect little girl into a boy. But sometimes that doesn't work out as well. And you may have a boy who's got a vagina and a penis, or only a vagina, but his behavior is more based on his feminine principle than masculine. So we are all androgynous, all of us. Some are more male, some are more female, some are both equally. So, with that in mind, each of us have to decide if we're male and we want respect, we will go for what we want. We want to do good to feel good. If we want to feel good to do good, we're doing more of the feminine negotiating and communicating. So that's the third tool. Not the third tool, it's the third paragraph in the hi-bye letter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fourth paragraph, the third paragraph, first one is all the things you like. The second is the pain of the split up. The third one is either what you want and you're a man, or what you don't want, and you're a woman. And the fourth is basically that you've got to communicate these things. And the fifth paragraph, thank them, whoever they are, for reading or listening. Mostly reading, because it's a hi-bye letter, and you say something to the effect, for example, if you inadvertently dumped somebody, in the painful paragraph, you'll admit that you dumped them and it was a mistake. Or if you were dumped by someone, the pain of being dumped, and how you, hopefully, in the fifth paragraph, you say, if you want to continue our relationship, thank you for reading this and give me a response. Do you want to continue to date? And have you accepted my amends for getting rid of you when I made a mistake? So that's the hi-bye letter. And usually, people respond fairly quickly because too often we make mistakes about terminating and being terminated. So that's what this tool is about.
You know, I agree with that 100%, Dr. Allen, but I also believe that your hi-bye letter is very cathartic, just in the nature.
It's cathartic for the person that's writing it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very rehabilitating for the person that receives it and appreciates the amends or appreciates the information and appreciates the opportunity to continue the relationship. That's the purpose of it.
I think one of the things that was, you know, I've been working with you for, oh, I don't know, seven forevers. And I remember the loss of a relationship and using your tools, a hi-bye letter specifically, to write it out. And, you know, I have to be honest, I never sent the letter because by the time I was finished writing it, I realized that I was done. I had gotten the lesson, and I'm always struck by what you say. You're going to keep repeating that relationship. It may have a different face. You know, it may say Rice Krispies, but when you open the box, it's cornflakes. You know, and yes. Then you open the next box and you think it's going to be Cocoa Puffs and it's cornflakes. Because you just keep repeating that lesson until you get that lesson.
Absolutely. In fact, every relationship of the next level, if you get the lesson from every relationship you have, whether it's family or friends, if you get what the lesson is in that relationship, you will automatically attract a better deal if you're paying attention. But if you're totally not taking time to investigate what was my part of this, then you're going to repeat it over and over and over again.
I think that's one of the mistakes that we make when we're hurt, when we're in pain from the loss of a relationship, is that we want to place blame on the other person exclusively, but you know, it takes two hands to clap. And like you say, it takes two people to waltz. You can slam dance, you can disco dance with a whole dance floor full of people. But if you're waltzing and someone makes a misstep, you can't blame the other person for that. And I think that we get sort of trapped in that scenario where we want to place blame, but nobody's ever completely 100% blameless and the end of a relationship. It's what you do with the material and what you've learned. And that's why I think I've always been so struck by you saying that. Stay until you get the lesson so you don't have to do this again and repeat the lesson.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And don't forget, the last paragraph is, thank you for the good times we've had, and thank you for the lesson I've learned, and especially thank you for reading this letter and, if possible, responding to it.
Do you ever think that, have you ever had the experience, other than me, with somebody saying once they finished writing the letter, they realized the lesson and they were done, so they didn't send it?
Yes, that happens very regularly. This letter proved to be a very cleansing experience for the person that was trapped in the unfinished nature of the relationship. You've got to finish a relationship one way or the other, or it gnaws at you. Do you see?
I think it does. I think a lot of people want to go through the concept of what they call closure, or the why of how come one person left.
This hi-bye letter is not just a closure. It may end up a closure, but mm-hmm. it's designed to give an opportunity to a second run at the relationship. The hi, that's the first four paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yes.
The bye is the fifth paragraph.
Right.
And what I want to do on this particular podcast is, how about that tool that evolved? Where did you go?
I am so glad you brought that up, because I have had multiple people ask me about that. And, you know, you've really refined that. There's some parameters that have to be met before you just send that out. You don't just send it out when you had a date with somebody and they didn't have anything to say, like, wow, this was fantastic, let's do it again. If you just said, you know, thank you, good night, then, so what are those parameters, Dr. Allen? What's your outline for that?
Okay. When Me Too was created a year or two ago, remember, that was a creation where women stood up for being molested and abused, especially by powerful men. Okay? Well,
yes.
the side issue that occurred was, I was finding in my therapy practice that men were becoming very afraid of being men dating women. And so what was happening is, the men were having a date, or maybe even two, and having a good time. They kissed her at home from those dates. They were watching the Me Too operation and the men that are part of it, and then they wouldn't call the women back. So on one particular day, five women called me, or, you know, talked to me, and said, what is going on? We had a good time, and he ghosted me. He didn't reach out and ask me out again. And I said, we need a tool that's built on the working tools, the five tools for fighting with men, which I'm not going to go into right now, but I'm going to go into, where did you go? Criteria one, you have got to have had a good date, whether in person or on Zoom, wherever you were, because this is before the virus problem some years ago. Pardon?
Before the plague.
Yes, that's true. So with that in mind, there had to be some inspiring moment that said you and this person had fun, but you never heard from him. So I get the call a week and no more than 2 weeks from that pivotal date. Where did he go? And I said, okay, we're going to create a side tool for where did he go. So when you had a good date and you didn't hear, and I'm going to say for women too, women date. So you had a good date and there was no redo. You send a message and it says, we had a good time when we went to the this or the that, and I haven't heard from you in a week, almost 2 weeks. Where did you go? That gives the other person, one, the awareness that you were in fact attracted, because the truth of the matter is, men were starting to think that dating was a dangerous sport, that you lose your career if you kissed her. So there was a lot of overreaction to fear of being punished as almost a molester. So they dropped it. And when you reached back to them with "Where did you go?" they knew that you had a good time and you weren't mad, and therefore they had the courage to ask you out again. So that's the foundation of "Where did you go?" Are you there,
Kelly? So I have several men that I have a class. They They ask me, you know, like, can we talk about what's going on with that whole Me Too movement? And you know, it's funny to hear men, especially men that I've had a lot of interaction with, basically tell me that they're afraid, like literally afraid to date anyone. Yes. Most of these men are in their late 40s, all the way up to late 50s. And they're telling me, you know, some of them are widows and some of them are just...
Remember, men in that bracket, their testosterone is going down. The estrogen in their body is impacting them. That's the midlife crisis. That's the perianthropause maturity problem. So
it's
science...
Really interesting, because these men are like... I said they're either widowed or they're divorced, and they don't want to go through the end of their life, this very sensitive period for men, alone, but they're quite frightened that they're going to be accused of something untoward, especially since they're from a generation where a guy asked a woman out and it wasn't a problem.
That's exactly right.
So totally correct. What advice do you have for them on how to ask a woman out without them? They're like, well, I'm going to ask her out. She's going to think I'm a perv, and then she's going to say this. I mean, Dr. Ellen, that's really dangerous in this time and day and age. I mean, like, to say I can't even ask somebody out for a coffee without being thought of as, you know, a pervert of some sort.
I understand that, but that's been overwhelmingly discounted now that we have our first problem. Have you noticed that on TV, the home scenes and the men with their children?
I have, and I think it's interesting that I think there's a lot of horrible things that have come out of this, a lot of increase in drug abuse and alcoholism and suicide. On the other side of that scale, I do see more interaction with fathers and children.
Yeah.
And familial relations. I see people longing for and missing family that they may have discounted. But I see a lot of, and I've had a lot of people reach out to me, and I don't know if you have yet, but there's some mandates that have gone down in California from the governor regarding Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Oh, yes.
People are getting really upset. They're contacting me and they're saying, I feel really upset about them saying, I can't be with my family and I can't do this and I can't do that. And it's making me feel very depressed. And so, you know, it's a difficult question, Dr. Allen.
I fully understand that, but it's a personal question because each of us has our own, you know, when to take risks and when not to take risks. Now, discounting the virus is dangerous. But it can be dangerous both over accepting and under. So we're in a very chaotic civil decisions, morally, ethically, and legally, have to be done as individuals rather than as groups of people.
I totally agree with that, Dr. Allen, and I love what you're talking about, because what I'm seeing, well, one of my clients came to me, a 56-year-old man, and he said to me, you know, I've lived a lot of life, I've done a lot of things in my life, and I'm telling you now, through this whole thing, I complied with it, I'm done complying, because this isn't living, it's merely existing. When liberty is overshadowed by the fear, and to be safe, where are we going with this? This isn't life. This is merely existing inside my house, and I'm done. And I was like, okay, it's your personal choice. I've got nothing to weigh in on that, but I do understand what he's saying.
Yes, that's true.
We faced viruses before that were horrible. AIDS, H1N1, the avian flu, and you know, I'm getting pushback, and I'm getting talkback about this. I didn't know if you were.
I'm getting what?
I'm getting pushback and talkback regarding the fact that people feel like they're not living anymore. They're merely existing in a bubble.
Our whole world is going through a cleansing process. What we're willing to do and what we're not willing to do. And that's where we're at. You know, in my book, Man's World, Woman's Universe, half of the book is how to be an I, how to be a we, and how to be an us.
Yeah.
Bigger family. And these are all of the issues that this virus problem has brought up. So when we are responsible as best we can, we will profit by the lesson, even though it's horrible.
That's very, very true.
Pardon?
I feel that's very true.
Yes, that is true. And so, you know, every painful lesson is an opportunity to grow as an individual. And that's the secret, you know. The best book, one of the best books I've ever read, Abraham Maslow's book, Toward a Psychology of Being. Are you a D person, deficient, not a person? Or are you a B person that's being you? You're doing what you know is right for you. May not be right for anybody else, but you are pledging to it. So you've got to be an I in order to be a we. Because if you're not an I, you can't negotiate with anybody else. And if you have enough... What?
I think that is a beautiful statement to end with, because we are out of time.
Okay. Well, God bless all of us in this painful time.
Indeed. And everybody, don't forget, get out and vote. Tuesday's the deadline. We love you all. Be safe. Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen. Empowered communication. right here on LA Talk Radio.